Okay, thanks. First off, I'd just like to thank the organizers for the invitation to talk about some work that I'm really passionate about. So, of course, it's Soybean, and thank you for that great introduction. So I'm going to be talking about what's called the Mid-South region of the United States. Laser pointer. Yes, okay. So it's kind of an unusual area. It's basically centered around Mississippi, and the temperatures are definitely higher, as you can see here. In blue, this would be my location. In orange, that's Stoneville, Mississippi. The most important part is that late in the season, July and August, the times when seed fill are most thirsty, as it were, there's a huge drop in precipitation, so it's as if there's a consistent drought stress every single year. So a gentleman by the name of Dr. Larry Heatherly changed the agronomic practices of the region such that they plant as early as possible. I've even heard some farmers plant in March, as soon as they possibly can, and they plant earlier maturing varieties, they harvest earlier. And this has boosted both seed yield for irrigated and non-irrigated conditions, as well as on-farm revenue. But it's not all good news. So this is a colleague of mine, Dr. Rusty Smith. He's also with the USDA based out of Stoneville. And he took advantage of a genetic bottleneck that occurred during soybean breeding in North America. So 80% of the genetic diversity for elite lines is derived from 11 to 12 lines. Less than 20 accounts for more than 95%. So he took those lines and he grew them under the ESPS, and this is the average standard germination, accelerated aging, hard seed, wrinkled seed, and phlomopsis infection. So the end result is that if you grow elite high-yielding lines under the ESPS, most likely if they experience heat stress, you're going to get docked when you bring them to the elevator. So he took advantage of not just this, but he also looked at the germplasm collection, which has about 19,000 accessions. He didn't look at all 19,000. But he looked at several hundred, and the best line was this line, PI587982A, no hard seed, no wrinkled seed, no phlomopsis, and it had near-perfect germination and emergence in the field. So Rusty's a breeder. He's been trying to move these into more adapted lines. I'm a geneticist, and I'm a very curious person. I want to know why these things do it and how they can resist these conditions. So this is primarily the work of two postdocs in my lab, Songqing Yi and Kranthi Chabrolu, as well as some other folks I've been working with. So in 2016, we published in Metabolomics a metabolomic analysis of these two lines. Because of time limitations, I'm not going to go into it, except to say that there was dramatically higher levels of antioxidants from a diverse range of classes. What I am going to talk about is an RNA-seq analysis focused on mature seed, imbibed seed, and germinated seed as our time points, where we contrasted just a tolerant line, which was derived from PI587982A, and a sensitive line, which is just typical of southern germplasm. And then I'm also going to talk about some QTL analysis, which we just about completed, focusing on seed germination and emergence as our phenotypic traits. So I was hoping that was a little clearer. This is basically a time course of temperatures for the 2 years of the study. We decided to do field-produced seed rather than growth chamber-produced seed for this experiment. So Rusty produced seed where this would be, these warmer colors are from R5 to R8, which are basically the period of seed fill for soybean. It's important to say that the tolerant genotype is actually slightly earlier, so it's exposed to higher temperatures than the sensitive genotype. And we contrasted that with seed that was produced in my location. You can see there's quite a difference in temperatures. And that temperature translates to big differences in germination. So the circles represent the tolerant genotype. This would be germination on this axis and time from 0 to 72 hours. The sensitive are the triangles here, and the dark is the my environment, and the lighter colors are basically the stressful environment. So for the sensitive line, it's not the best line. I will be the first to say this. It tends to germinate a bit slower. We get about 75 to 85% germination depending on the experiment. In the ESPS, it drops down to about 25% germination, so it's very severely affected. The tolerant line, which is a derivative of PI587982A, goes from almost 100% down to about 80%, so it seems to resist these temperatures quite considerably. So we took three time points of mature dry seed, 6 hours imbibed, and then at physiological germination, which was when the radical first emerged, that first two-hour time period. So I could show you endless Venn diagrams and k-means clustering, but frankly, I don't find that it's all that informative, so I'm going to spare you. But we are doing some gene ontology enrichment analysis. So when we ignored genotypes, we pulled it all together and analyzed it. We found a huge enrichment for lots of classes upregulated, heat acclimation, heat response, oxidative stress, all the things that you would normally expect. And a number of developmental processes were actually downregulated under stress as opposed to the control condition. There were differences between the genotypes. So for tolerant, we found an upregulation of several genes involved in protein refolding or import into peroxisomes, as well as nuclear transcribed mRNA catabolic processes. So this could indicate that the seeds have better quality control of protein and perhaps RNA. There was a wide range of ones that were much lower in accumulation. I've highlighted just a couple here, ribosome translation, RNA methylation, RNA binding, which is kind of interesting. For the sensitive, we saw a huge number which were upregulated for ribosomes translation, RNA methylation, defense responses, hypersensitive responses, et cetera, photorespiration, and a large number of categories involved in energy metabolism or various developmental morphogenetic processes were downregulated. And it was kind of interesting that we actually saw sort of a direct overlap where some of the gene ontologies which were lower in the tolerant line were higher in the sensitive. So we're still very much analyzing this data, and it's unpublished, but I find it kind of fascinating. And you'd be amazed how many people believe that there is no such thing as a transcriptome that you can isolate from mature seed. I've actually had professors argue with me in the hallway about that. Okay, so I'm going to change gears and talk about QTL analysis. For all of you who've done genetic analysis, you know more environments is always a better thing. So we decided to kind of hedge our bets, and we did a greenhouse-based study where it was maintained at near perfect conditions for soybean until flowering, and then we cranked up the temperatures. We also grew it in Stoneville, Mississippi under the ESPS. The temperatures routinely get up during seed fill to 35 to 36 degrees. So this would be a more consistent stress. This would be a much more intermittent stress. The population that I developed was essentially 25% from the tolerant line and about 75% from 5601T, which for many years was a yield check for the southern regions developed by Vince Pantalone at the University of Tennessee. It also has integrated two genes from a mutant line such that it changes the seed composition to lower the levels of this compound, myo-inositol hexokiss phosphate, which is a storage form of phosphorus and has been an anti-nutritional compound. Monogastric animals lack the enzymatic machinery to break it down effectively. So soybean seeds have a deficiency of phosphorus and divalent cations, even though they're a very rich source of it, effectively. The population is a BC1F56. We had 172 rills. We had a little bit of a segregation distortion at winter nursery, otherwise it would be much bigger. And we're using genotyping by sequencing in my lab because it both enriches for regions of the genome where we've got genes, such as here, markers in blue, genes in orange, and it also is the most cost-effective method for genotyping that I've found so far. So the low phytic acid alleles from the mutant line are both, there are two mutations that I cloned in 2009, and they affect an ATP binding cassette transporter, two homologs on two different chromosomes. When you're homozygous for both mutations, it changes the phosphorus distribution so that you have free phosphorus and a dramatic reduction in phytic acid. But it's not all good news. There have been sporadic reports in the literature that, you know, from certain seed source locations, we've got poor emergence germination, other locations it doesn't, and no one was really sure what the cause of it was. So this is a technician in my lab, Jeremy Mullis. He's a very dedicated, methodical, and tireless field worker. For some reason, I asked him for a picture, and this is what he sent to me. He was in charge of doing these analyses. We did a greenhouse experiment over 2 years, and then we also planted in two non-stressed locations. We measured emergence of seed at those locations. There's our temperature profile for the greenhouse. This was RCBD 3 reps, and we harvested from the greenhouse within 1 week of maturity. It was threshed and stored at 25 degrees, and then we did the germination assays in my lab less than a month later. So they didn't have time to age. We also took that seed, which we produced under the heat environment, and then we planted it back at two locations, 3 random complete blocks, and we measured emergence at approximately V3. So this is the phenotypic distribution from the two non-heat stressed origins. The sensitive parent is in orange, the tolerant parent is in black. they're essentially the same. There's a bit of a tail here, but it averages about 85% germination. When we took this data and tried to map with it, we didn't find anything that was above threshold. So when I did it with the whole four heat stress origins separately, this is the phenotypic distribution. This would be the field locations. They're actually overlapping, and these are the two greenhouse growouts. There's quite a good separation between parents, and the average is about 45 to 50%. More importantly, when I used that information to map, we identified QTL. So this is the four growouts. I'm showing you chromosome 1, chromosome 3. I've got this blocked out. I apologize, it's unpublished. And chromosome 19. So two of these QTL on 3 and 19 overlap nearly perfectly with the low phytic acid loci I had previously cloned. So although it had been hinted, this is the first time in soybean that anybody's definitely demonstrated that this change in seed composition is also directly responsible for heat sensitivity. And more importantly, we also identified a novel QTL. All of the alleles which benefited germination were coming from PI587982A. We didn't identify anything from others. I'm going to skip over this because of time. But the novel QTL was responsible in all of the locations for an increase in germination. In the greenhouse ones, it seemed to have a slightly stronger effect. It was about 20%, whereas in the field, it was about a 15% increase in germination potential. It's likely that this is a bit misleading. The low phytic acid loci had a very strong effect. Maybe if those were not present, we might see a much bigger effect. And I'll be the first to say that the Bevis effect possibly means that we're missing some other minor QTL. I'll be the first to say that this right now is a regional problem. So in the Mid-South region, temperatures are such that if someone grows things under the ESPS to avoid drought, they encounter this problem with high temperatures. But I think as climate change progresses through this century, we're going to see much more widespread problems. So for example, one of the projections basically says that for Illinois, the climate by mid-century is going to be more like Tennessee or Arkansas and could potentially be like Western Texas by the end of the century. So I'll just wrap it up. So the first germplasm release was done this year by Dr. Rusty Smith. The line is DS25-1, and this is the first U.S. germplasm intended to deal with these high temperature conditions. It's a maturity group 4. It's a fairly good line, although I'll be the first to say that the yield isn't quite there. We have additional back crossing and additional germplasm in development. If you're interested in obtaining this, it's freely available. All you have to do is contact Rusty Smith or send me an email, and I'll let you get it underway. So. That's all I've got. I do want to acknowledge that this is definitely a multidisciplinary project. There's a number of researchers, both USDA and Missouri, and also Vince Pantalone at the University of Tennessee and Kristen Ballou. And this was funded in part by the United Soybean Board on two different projects.
We have time for a question for Dr. Gilman.
Why did you choose to put the low phytic acid line in? You had some idea that
yes.
This would interact.
Okay. So the truth is I had a gut feeling years ago that it was probably a temperature sensitivity. So Welt Fair reported that winter nursery produced seed had this sensitivity, and he seemed to indicate in conversations with me that it didn't matter what winter nursery or what year, it just seemed to be when it was hot. And so I had the hope that potentially this heat tolerance could compensate. And there is a very slight compensation, but it's not enough to bring it up. The low phytic acid alleles drop it down from about, I would say, 65 to 70%. These lines, under good conditions, have 80 to 90% germination. It drops it down to 30% or lower when you've got heat stress. So that was the original idea, was that I'd be able to compensate. Didn't work out, but we got some interesting biology.
So the germplasm line that you mentioned at the end, where does that compare maturity wise to one of the parents you mentioned, the 56012?
Oh, sure. So this is basically a maturity group 4. I could probably dig up the specific days, but I don't have it on with me right now.
Sure.
5601T, of course, would be a maturity group 5 line, and the original PI 587982A is basically a maturity group 3. So it's approximately intermediate. We do have additional germplasm intended to go from late 2 all the way up to 5 in the works, but it's not out yet.
Is the low-fi tested line affect the quality of the CO2
under heat stress? Definitely. It impacts germination in particular. The seed quality can also take a bit of a dip. There are some very slight changes. There's slightly higher oil and slight changes in the oil composition, but they're very slight. These seeds look perfectly normal. They don't look shriveled except when they're produced under heat or drought stress, presumably.
The Brazilians have been really, really successful at breeding tropical soybeans. So is there any relationship to the QTLs that you're finding here and what the Brazilians have incorporated?
That's an excellent question. I don't know. So far, I haven't looked at the literature, and I'm not really sure if they've been genetically mapping it. If so, I need to get back to the literature.
Probably a little proprietary.
Yeah, that would be the other part. I'm in the public sector, a public scientist. They're probably more interested in actually releasing varieties that are adapted. I wouldn't be surprised if we hit the same genomic regions. Yeah. Hopefully I can talk about that at a future meeting.
I hope so.
We'll have to hold further questions till later. Okay, thank you very much.